this month, with everything that's and all these different headlines, they affect investments and money and how people make their decisions. So let's talk a little bit about that just to get started. Economic concerns. You know, we're worried about, well, are we dipping into another recession? We're going to be talking about the fiscal cliff and everything else. People go, what's going on, Pete?
Well, you know, I thought it was appropriate because the trends, as you see in the stock market, continue to be quite interesting in that the last 4 or 5 years, there has been a tremendous outflow out of the equity markets and an inflow into the fixed income markets, which, you know, is kind of interesting in that with the low rates that we've talked about for several months, people are very content to get very modest to bad returns because they think it's safe.
Right.
And so what I thought we'd talk a little bit today is why is that? I mean, what's going on out there? Where is the consternation? How legitimate is it? How much is fact? How much is fiction? And, you know, maybe go from there and talk about going forward what we're thinking.
Okay, so let's talk about the things. Why is it that people are so nervous with their money and saying, I want it someplace safe?
Well, I think that question probably goes to what I call stock market fatigue.
Okay.
And by that I mean, if you look in the last 12 years, virtually, if you look at the big picture, the S&P has barely moved. I think it's plus maybe a percent or two. All right, that comes after the 1982 to 2000 period of time, where the S&P averaged, I believe, give or take, 18% a year. So, you know, that was...
those were the good old days.
Good old days. Guys were quitting their job to become day traders. You know, everywhere you looked, you were making money. Well, in 2000 to 2002, we had a fairly severe pullback. I mean, the NASDAQ, which hit 5,000 in March of 2000, you know, is now back over 3,000. 12 years later. And so we had that. So then we had a little from 2002 to the peak of October 2007. We had a pretty good run again. But then we had the 2008, which was the market was halved. 2009 was pretty good, but we had a big pullback in 2010. We had a big pullback in 2011. And I just think the emotional roller coaster of up and down and nowhere, ending up nowhere, people have gotten frustrated.
Yeah, and it's kind of led to the headline I read in the money section of the USA Today yesterday was, will we ever reach those highs again? And it referred to the good old days. And there's not a lot of optimism out there.
Yeah, and, you know, I think if you are astute in the market, you know, when people start behaving like they do, is that we're probably closer to the end of this stock market malaise or stock market apathy or whatever than we are to the beginning of this, because Business Week used to be the ultimate contrary indicator, and in 1981, about 6 months before the greatest bull market and we'll may ever experience, you know, the death of equities and things like that. And you know, the ironic part of this whole thing is that we have the overlay of these countries who are in economically crazy shape, but we have probably more large corporate entities that are financially in unbelievable shape. They have plenty of cash. Mm-hmm. They've got, you know, in this low interest rate environment, they've refinanced, and you know, the Johnson and Johnsons and Microsofts and IBMs are, you know, have long term debt at 1.5% versus, you know, at the beginning of the last bull market, interest rates were double digits and things. So my sense on that is that there's a lot of pretty interesting things going on if we can get into an environment of some certainty. And unfortunately, if, that's going to require some political cooperation. And so that is one of the great things overhanging the market.
Okay. If you're just joining us, welcome to Financial Insights from Buena Vista Investment Management with Pete Bry. Again, their number is 715-422-0700, 422-0700. And that leads to talk about domestic issues. And when people hear, well, there's a lot of money sitting on the sideline, they're hearing about this financial cliff, we might be taking a dive over in there, wondering what's going on, and how this is affecting the market and markets.
I think this is probably one of the biggest concerns overlaying the stock market. So let's take a step back. When
okay.
you call fiscal cliff, all right,
right.
What are we exactly talking about? And this was a term that's been applied to the events that are going to occur at year end. One of the things that Congress, at least in the last 4 years, and there's probably a history that dates back longer, is that a great ability to kick things down the road.
Right.
You know, and we'll worry, let someone worry about it. Well, because of a lot of the things, our economy and in 2008, there's been a lot of legislation that was passed that wasn't permanent or wasn't 4 years or 5 years, like when we had the Bush tax cuts in 2002, that spelled out tax and the rates and everything for 8 years. So
right.
you had a very solid plan that you could do. Well, you know, the Bush tax cuts have been extended twice. That comes due at the end of 2012. All right.
Right.
As we know, you have twice seen the amount of Social Security taken out of your paycheck lowered from 6% to 4%. That comes due at the end of the year. In terms of the alternative minimum tax and the relief that was given in prior to this, that comes due in the end of the year. In addition, last year when we had the Congress not necessarily being able to figure out the spending side, and they had to increase the debt ceiling and all that, and they passed a bill that basically said if we don't have spending intact by the end of 2012, there'll be automatic cuts.
Right.
And you know, the cumulative effect of all these, first of all, taking more money from the individual through taxes.
Mm-hmm.
Obviously, very simplistic, but, you know, people kind of live from what they make, you know, especially now as people have gotten more conservative and aren't using as much debt, they spend what they comes in with their check. If you have less money coming in for your check, it's obvious you're going to spend less.
Right.
And so if you spend less, that means the economy's got less sales, and so you have that standpoint that you know, working, and then if the spending cuts come in as projected, again, if you're going to cut in defense or you're going to cut in other discretionary areas, that's less money going into the system. It's less money going to programs. So consequently, programs are going to have to be reduced. Wages have to be reduced. And so the projection is that if the Congress does nothing before all these expire, that this could have anywhere from 1.5% to as much as I've seen 5% effect on GNP. Well, in an environment where we're growing at 1 to 2%, I don't think anyone needs to be a math major. As if you take 5 and minus 2, or you take any goals combination, we'll be at virtually zero growth, or we could be at negative growth,
which would be a recession.
Correct. And a recession, as we well know, isn't really good for creating jobs and lowering our unemployment rate. So, you know, the projections are that the unemployment may go back up to north of 9% and things. So you can see where you can get a little quite worried about the for two reasons. Obviously, the magnitude of the dollars involved and the money being sucked out of the economy, and two, having to rely on Congress to get it together.
And that, when you say that, people go, they're not optimistic about that happening.
Well, you know, you've got an election. You know, if this was an off year, I think the degree of concern would not be as great. But, you know, you have a lot of things at stake. You obviously, starting at the presidential office, going all the way down to your local offices, and things. So the control of the House, the control of the Senate, all these are very important in terms of trying to get it, because as much as it'll be interesting to see what the catalyst is to get out of this really very partisan positions and start to get back to working together and things like that. And, you know, all these things go in cycles. So, you know, it's the hope that we're closer to the end of this, you know, craziness than we are the beginning. But, you know, I think what we're seeing as it pertains to the markets, because interesting enough, you know, prior to this week where the market's been down 3 of the 4 days,
right,
we were really close to being at multi-year highs again. And the market has gradually worked its way back up. And so there's an element there, you know, if it was a doom and gloom scenario, if the market was perceiving a doom and gloom, you know, I think the market wouldn't necessarily be priced accordingly, all right?
Okay.
The fact that it isn't, and it's closer to a high and low, I think is an interesting comment. Now, having said that, obviously the market reacts to news that isn't priced into the market. So, you know, if we get closer, as closer we get to the year end, and the more it would appear we don't have some kind of legislation, whether temporary or permanent, in terms of some of these things, you know, I think that's where it gets a little dicey in terms of the market and where it is now versus where it could be if, you know, in fact, these guys don't get it together. Yeah. You know, everybody talks about the Churchill quote of Americans will finally get it right after they've tried everything else, and things. So, you know, there's quite a bit on the line here, and it would affect a lot of things, and yet you don't even hear any really strong rhetoric one way or let's get this done and we got to work together and things like that. So the consensus is that, you know, we'll get through the election, we'll see where that plays out, and then the lame duck Congress will, you know, project to probably pass some kind of legislation that kicks it to the next Congress.
Well, not only do domestic issues affect the market, but the international situation as well. And we'll talk a bit about that when Financial Insights from Buena Vista Investment Management with Pete Pry continues right after this.
One, two, three, four! Back-to-back defending Big Ten champs are back. This year, Heisman hopeful Monty Ball will lead the Badgers offense.
High backs, handoff, Monty Ball up the middle to the five, ball to the end zone!
As they battle for a third consecutive Big Ten championship.
Yes!
Tune in all season long right here.
Don't miss Badger football all season long on the new home for the Badgers. Cool Gold, 105.5 WRCW.
With the extreme heat and high RPMs of racing, a stock car travels 500 miles between oil changes. Your car deals with extreme heat and friction too, like sweating through stop-and-go Los Angeles traffic. Mobil 1 Extended Performance Advanced Fully Synthetic Motor Oil is proven to keep your engine running like new for up to 15,000 miles between oil changes. Not that you'd ever go that long, but you could. Mobil 1 Extended Performance. Visit mobil1.us for more details.
Here's your forecast from the WeatherEye Weather Center.
We'll see partial sunshine here for this afternoon with a slight chance for an isolated shower or thunderstorm early on. We'll have southwest winds at 5 to 15 miles per hour, so it'll be a bit gusty at times, and we'll see a high into the lower 90s. For tonight, partly cloudy skies, south winds will diminish at 5 to 10, and we'll see a low near 63. Saturday, we'll see a blend of clouds and sunshine early, then increasing cloud cover. Chance for showers and storms, high near 86. From the WeatherEye Weather Center, I'm meteorologist Jennifer Wojcicki.
Thank you, Jennifer. Partly sunny and 73 at AM 1320. Welcome back to Financial Insights from Buena Vista Investment Management with Pete Bry. Again, their number is 715-422-0700. Okay, we talked about domestic issues, Pete, but let's talk about Europe, which has also been affecting our market and has people worried if things go down the tubes in Europe, will it come over across the pond over here?
Well, Europe has unfortunately been a topic of concern now, seems like forever, but, you know, certainly in the last 2 years. And it's kind of been a mixed bag. Obviously, Greece, whose economy is extremely small, but probably had more debt than, who knows, you know, most of the world combined. What went on in Greece is probably an example of what's probably going on there. They finally got it right. You know, they had to have two elections to get the right people in. All right, they got the people in. They were willing to take some cuts, and so that was an example of, you know, when push comes to shove, I would believe that the euro is going to stay intact. All right,
okay.
Now. Ireland, who prior to that had some issues, they were starting to get back on track. The big concerns as it goes now is Spain is in an incredibly Spain's like the third biggest economy behind Germany and being the first and stuff and Spain is in a really an interesting position in that. Unemployment is extremely high among 15 or 20 to 40, 20 to 35, somewhere like that. It's almost 40%. They've got some housing, much like we had issues. And so their banks are much like the 2008 bank crisis here in the United States. So, you know, that's been an overriding concern. Italy, although have a lot of really good things going on, also has debt that people are concerned about. What's triggered a temporary rally is the European equivalent of the Federal Reserve. The head says, we'll do what it takes. And so that was kind of the assurance that, all right, it may not be we don't know when this is going to happen, but if something happens, we're going to be there to provide liquidity for those particular markets. They said they've provided the Spain bank. So, you know, that's kind of priced into the market. And so you hear a lot of, but the risk becomes, I don't think so much that Spain goes under or Italy goes under or the euro breaks up. I don't think anything that happens. I think what is the interesting part, and this is why at Buena Vista we've reduced our exposure earlier this year to Europe because Part of getting your fiscal house in order is there's a lot of spending cuts going on.
Mm-hmm.
France just implemented a 75% tax on certain income levels. So part of the thing we're talking about in the fiscal cliff, taxing more and spending less, will result in very subpar or maybe even no growth or mm-hmm. negative growth and things. So we look for that particular area as a whole to not be a very attractive place for a while as they kind of fight their way through all this debt. Now, having said that, it's like anything, you know, the big, large international companies in Europe that do a lot of business throughout the world are pretty, might be pretty interesting in that they pay good dividends and, mm-hmm. and the European dividends, there's funds out there that have big, large, European companies that who are yielding 5, 6, 7%. So, our exposure in there in Europe is something that's going to pay us while we wait. But our take is that the euro is going to be around. The countries aren't going to disappear after thousands of years on the earth, but it's going to be some pain and suffering, and the returns may not necessarily be very dynamic. If you look, and again, this is jumping aboard, but, you know, people say, well, they'll come back. Well, you know, in 1989, just to give you an example,
okay,
the Japan market was 39,000.
Okay.
All right. We are now, what is that, 11 and 21, 22, 23 years later. Mm-hmm. It's, you know, been about 10,000. It's been about that way for a long time. So, I mean, you know, the idea in the equity markets that, well, you know, it'll eventually get back. Yeah, maybe, but, you know, for those guys who bought at 30,000 in the Nikkei index, they've now waited 23 years, and they've still got one-third of what they started, you know. Mm-hmm. So you've got a real loss, and you got an opportunity cost, too. So anyway, so that's our thoughts on the Europe piece.
Okay. So then we look at China, and and their exports are down, and we're hearing that they're becoming more of a consumer-driven importing consumer-driven economy. And the article you shared with me from Forbes, the headline, China won't save the world economy. And everybody is going, oh, no, if China's going down, we're really in trouble.
And that's understandable, because if you start looking at the volume of what China buys from the world in natural resources, whether it's energy or iron ore or copper or all those things, I mean, it's a huge percentage. In some cases, as much as 50% of all the some of these natural resources are being bought by China. You know, on the other side of the coin, what's been driving their economy is that as manufacturers, they've been the low-cost producer. And so, as so many people have come to know, is that everything you get, a lot of the things you get when you go to the U.S. stores are made in China, made in China, made in China. The interesting phenomena that's going on there, and this will take some time to play out, is that in their infinite wisdom to try and control everybody and how what they do and how they act,
right.
And I don't even know when this was implemented, but they have the one-child policy in China.
Right.
And by that, every family can have one child, and that's it. Well, you know, when you screw around with Mother Nature, somehow, you know, things occur that you didn't necessarily anticipate. And so China has built up all these manufacturing places and have been a world leader in exporting. And now, because of we've had probably a generation of one-child families, the need for workers have increased dramatically, because there isn't as many workers as there's jobs and jobs projected jobs into the near future. So, because of that, The manufacturers have to pay more money to the workers. Well, the effect of that is twofold. Obviously, if they're paying and their cost of their raw materials that go into manufacturing and the employment costs both go up, they have to pass those costs on to the consumer or the purchaser of their exports. And so you've seen pricing on China goods gone up fairly dramatically over the last 18 months at a time that the economy, you know, over the world has started to slow. So you've seen the equivalent of our GDP or GNP, whatever you want to number you want to use, continue to sag. But you know, everybody loves to be the first guy to predict doom and gloom. The last quarter, their gross national product was still growing at 8%. I mean, in a world where there's many countries at 0, -1, 1.5%. So in terms of them not disappearing or them going into the abyss, you know, that's a ridiculous thing. I mean, they're going through this transformation because the second effect of what's going on with the higher prices is that the workers who now work there will have more money. And when what they'll do with that money is projected to be that they'll spend it. And so you'll see that China's going to be, their GDP, GNP will be more over the upcoming decade dictated by what's going on internally in China in terms of trade, in terms of consumption and things like that. But you know, my guess is that somewhere in here, China, if you hadn't had some exposure to China, it'll be somewhere to start getting a small position, because you know the time to buy is when everybody's saying the world's coming to an end, and China's not going away, and they're still growing at a relatively high relative rate.
And I guess that's kind of like the summary of our discussion this morning. Everybody's kind of in panic mode, but there are opportunities out there. Now's the time to take advantage of some good opportunities.
Yeah, I would tend to agree. I mean, I would think in the short term that having a little more cash than usual might be a defensive move, obviously. There's a lot of things that could happen or not, but it would be having cash on the sidelines and taking advantage of any particular pullbacks. I think especially in large, good quality companies that are paying you 2-4% ETFs or mutual funds that are paying you, because the money market's zero, is a situation. But I got to tell you that if, and this is capital I, capital F, but if we could get the next Congress to give us some definitive guidance in terms of tax rates and estate taxes and capital expenditures and tax code, whether we like them or not, but if we get something with 5 years or, you know, a long time.
Sure.
Things are pretty interesting in our country. You know, the fracking has led us to 58% in exports a few years ago in imports. We were importing 58%. It's now down to 42. They think by 2020, we might be a net exporter. We've got great interest rates on mortgages. 2.75, 3 for the 15-year. We got low prices in real estate. If we can get some certainty and we can create some jobs, there's some things in place that are kind of game-changing.
Okay, so there's reason for hope.
There's always reason for hope, and you know, as much as investing can tend to be an emotional business, the less emotion and the more facts and figures you put in it, the better you do.
And that's why when you want some local insights, contact the professionals at Buena Vista Investment Management. Their number is 715-422-0700, 422-0700. Peter, a very interesting conversation. I'm a little more hopeful now.
Beautiful. Hope you have a great weekend.
You too. too, Peter. And that's going to wrap up this edition of Financial Insights from Buena Vista Investment Management with Pete Bry. Coming up next, CBS News covers the world, and then it's time for Over the Back Fence. I will rejoin you at 12:06 with the Noon Report. Plenty of information.